It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's RIVERFRONT, one word, for $20 off.
What is going on, everybody? I hope you all are having a fantastic week. This is the Bengals Show, presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is the ever handsome and completely snubbed for People Magazine's sexiest podcaster of the year, Greg Niemann. Greg, what's happening, man?
Living the dream. Can't believe I got snubbed. Unbelievable.
Our entire roster, I mean, between you, me, Nate, Tim, Ben, Chad, there needs to be a recount. We got screwed. I'm never going to buy another episode, never edition of People Magazine again. And I ask that you join me in this boycott.
I will join. It feels like a major problem. Injustice.
Absolute oversight. We were snubbed. It's all political. So. Oh well. If you guys are watching on YouTube, please like, subscribe, and all that fun crap. If you guys still are on Facebook, facebook.com, Riverfront Cincy, you guys know where to find us all. Patreon.com, Riverfront Cincy, join the family. Get access to our excellent, excellent Slack channel. Get exclusives. We have fun. You should have fun with us. Outside of that, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your life. Greg, you want to talk about the Bengals?
I'm ready to talk about the Bengals.
Any thoughts about Sunday night's game, a 24-18 victory over the theoretically vaunted Buffalo Bills?
It was a lot of fun to watch. Bengals came out hot, came out aggressive early, and punched those first two drives in. I thought they looked how do I want to say it? I thought they looked like they put it kind of in cruise control a little bit, which is. You never want to see it, but also if you're putting it in cruise control, that means that you played well enough to put it in cruise control. So that's a good thing. But I thought they put it in cruise control a little bit, but the game was never really in doubt. So I'm totally good on my part. The fans at Paycor, as always, were amazing. It was an electric atmosphere. So everything about it was exactly what you expected. I saw a thing on Facebook, might have been on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it, where it said guys will get mad about dressing up for a family photo, but then if it's a Monday Night Football game, we can get 65,000 to dress up perfectly the same. So I think that was very true.
That stadium looked absolutely, and for those that are on listening to the audio feed, I've got a picture of the stadium with the stripes. It looked absolutely incredible. It's surprising considering, the Bengals didn't provide any t-shirts, to make sure someone had, everyone had the right color. Everyone outside of the Bills fans that had their blue or white, it's hard to see anybody that didn't actually, do their part, so. They're trying their best to create. It's almost like a college atmosphere. NFL game atmospheres are kind of ass, if you ask me. It's just a bunch of people that are just drunken assholes and belligerent. And if you can make it more of a college atmosphere, it makes it a little more fun for the family. Do the cool stuff. I mean, they've got all of the Rulers of the Jungle. They've got the guest guitarist between the third and fourth quarters, stuff like that. It's a completely unique atmosphere just over the couple of years. Again, kudos to the Blackburn sisters for what they're doing there. Was this a ho-hum game? I mean, again, like you said, they were in control throughout. Once again, left points on the field. Should we be concerned, or is it reason to be excited they're beating playoff quality teams without playing anything close to a complete game?
I personally think that it's good for the Bengals. You know, when you get to a regular season game and you can put it on cruise control, that's exactly what you want. Now, when you get to the playoffs, it's a different story. You know, every down, every single play, you're going to take it as seriously as you can. Not that they didn't take it seriously, but you don't want to exhaust yourself trying to win regular season games by 14 to 17 to 21 points. Regular season is you got to get through it. You're not going to go undefeated. You need to get through it. And we're just trying to get to the postseason healthy. So it doesn't concern me at all. I think it makes me very happy because I think there's room for not necessarily improvement, but just kind of honing in on doing the things correctly throughout the entire game. Not making the mistakes of giving the ball away or leaving points on the field. So for me, I see it as a positive that you can have a ho-hum game against a really good Bills team and really kind of put them away after you did similar things to the Niners. It just really shows to me what the Bengals are kind of becoming. So for me, it's all positive.
Yeah, in the past 4 weeks, Burrow's hitting something like 77% of his passes, which is absolutely ridiculous. But again, he's the most accurate quarterback in NFL history, so it's not, if anyone were to do it, that it's him isn't really surprising. Real quick, just to go over our three keys that we had going into the game. First one was an efficient run game. It started out efficient, and then just like the rest of the day, middle half was absolutely non-existent, but it showed up when we needed it at the very last drive to milk out, get that final first down so they could take knees. Mixon was 14 for 37, 2.6 yards per carry. You need to do better, but you still won without it.
Yeah, I think sometimes in the run game, especially for the Bengals, timing is going to be everything. So we don't need Mixon to run for 125, but the timing of when his runs are successful, I think is very key. So if the Bengals can run the ball early, get a lead, get out to an easy lead, and then they kind of just milk things away with their defense and with Burrow and with Mixon, I think we're onto a positive recipe for success.
Yeah, absolutely. Our second key was an explosive passing game, and I think they hit on that absolutely. They had 9 passes of 15 yards or more. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the biggest passing play was the touchdown to Drew Sample. It wasn't even a downfield pass. It was just kind of a dump off, but he made some moves, showed some speed. I mean, he was up to, I think, 18 miles an hour. They showed, someone showed me a picture of the scoreboard at Paycor where they had his, the fastest ball carriers, and he was like 17, 18 miles an hour, which not too bad for a big guy. So, yeah, I mean, that's something that they've been missing all season long, and they're, getting it more and more as the offense rolls into shape, but I think they absolutely hit on that one.
I think that whoever designed the play or came up with the scheme, I think Zach Taylor, maybe it was Joe Burrow, I don't know, but brilliant coaching by the Bengals, just schematically to have Drew Sample, who everybody knows is a blocking tight end. They keep him in to pass block all the time. You see him as the lone back there to be the blocking back. And of course, people have to still honor him in the pass game or at least match somebody up with him. But the answer to that defensively is if Drew Sample just stays in to give you extra protection, whoever's matched up against him just becomes an additional blitzer. Well, what happened was the Bengals kind of flipped that on its head. When you brought him as an additional blitzer, Sample just leaked out, and now it's a two-yard pass that turns into a touchdown. So I thought the Bengals did a great job of schematically getting some things there against the Bills that were that they hadn't really shown, and it was a very easy completion to Sample, who's not necessarily great in space if he's trying to catch the ball. But once he gets it, you know, he's a big, big dude. So I thought that was a really good schematic game plan by the Bengals.
And that kind of leads into our third key of the game, which was to employ Tanner Hudson. They utilized the entire tight end room. 10 catches, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Irv Smith had the other one. He had the first touchdown of the game. So it's, I don't want to say surprising, but it's bodes well for him that he didn't completely lose Joe Burrow's trust. I think they Bills completely made it their defensive game plan to keep Ja'Marr Chase from beating them. I mean, he's been the key the last handful of games. Bengals have just been absolutely feeding him, feeding him, feeding him. So they, you know, definitely tilted the field over to his direction, which left T. Higgins. T. had a big game, 8 for 110, and then they utilized the tight end room, which was what we've been wanting them to use. And I'm not sure how they schemed it up, but again, this goes more to Brian Callahan, Zach Taylor, and the offensive coaches to be able to use these guys underneath. They hit Hudson downfield on a couple plays down the seam. Irv Smith, you know, made plays in the corner of the end zone for that touchdown. So that you're showing more, you're making the defense have to worry about more. They kept splitting Chris Evans out wide in pass patterns. He didn't get a target, but just giving these defensive coordinators so much to think about.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job of, and this is what is the most dangerous thing about the Bengals. That's fine. You want to take Ja'Marr Chase away? That's cool. Go ahead. But you're going to have to double him if you want to take him away. And the Bills were using a lot of zone, which is, you know, part of being able to get over top and underneath of Chase. And the Bengals said, okay, that's fine. We're going to go elsewhere, and we're going to absolutely eat you alive going elsewhere. And if you can do that, now as a defense, what do you do? Do you take Chase away, or do you try to take everything else away, and then Chase goes off and has 175 receiving? It's just gotten to the point where when the Bengals are rolling right, as a defense, you almost can't be right. I just don't know what you do unless you can just match up with everybody across the board one-on-one, which, I mean, good luck.
Yeah, it's funny because everyone talks about, oh, they need to take Chase away, and you know, they've got to completely try to negate him. Bengals went 3-1 last year with him completely off the field, so they'll be just fine if you put more players on his side, because that just gives fewer defenders to cover everyone else. So isolate him, put, you know, do a 3-by-1, put him by himself on the one. If you're going to double him up on that, then you've got three receivers on the other side of the field getting man-to-man coverage or huge gaps in the zone. So good. Last little thing about the offense before we get out of here. And again, we touched on it, still hitting huge gaps in productivity. First two drives, again, that's all on script. That's stuff that they plan out before in the week going up to. Two touchdowns, and they went punt, punt, touchdown, punt, downs, kneel, or field goal and a kneel. So, I mean, it's that's their drives the rest of the game. So it's not quite all or nothing, but it's they still get stagnant and bogged down. My perspective on that is it's just the offense catching, you know, still just getting up to speed, and Burrow getting in the flow and them being able to just finally work in. They had 5 or 6 weeks of having a limited game plan, and now they're trying to bring back what they had while still trying to figure out what worked, you know, in the first handful of weeks. What do you think is the best, or what do you think is the reason and solution for that?
I think when you look at the Bengals offense, you can see exactly what's happening with their progression. You can see step by step. So each game. So, you know, as Burrow got healthy, we saw in Arizona, Ja'Marr Chase. They wanted to get Ja'Marr Chase going. He goes absolutely off. From that point, every week, it's been a different step forward, and it's been a different transition in the offense. If they keep that going, I mean, you can like literally clearly see the Bengals offense taking steps in the right direction with the tight end room, with T. Higgins, with Ja'Marr Chase, with Joe Mixon. Every week, you see that step forward. If that continues, they're going to be in a really, really good spot late in the season. I love where the Bengals offense is at. I love where it's headed. They're going to have a lot of answers to a lot of things that people are going to try to do to them. And when you can do that, that makes the defense basically just have to guess. When you can't stop everything as a defensive coordinator, now you just have to guess and hope you're right on what they're going to do to you. That's a scary situation because that means at any point, if you guess wrong, big plays are coming. And that's where I think the Bengals are headed. I think they just keep moving forward methodically, yet you can still see the results pretty dramatically.
Yeah, if they can get the defense, I mean, not to look past this Sunday's game against the Texans, but going forward, you have the Ravens and their defense. Between their defense and the Browns defense, man, they're just some ridiculous defenses the Bengals have to face, you know, again, you know, once more this year. But if you can just get them off, just get them to slow that little quarter of a second just to get them to think, it's obviously, I mean, that's if you can make the team react, you know, react to you instead of you react to them, then you've got the advantage. So, going forward for the defense last week, three keys. First one was to frustrate Stephon Diggs. He had 6 catches, 86 yards, and a touchdown. It's a decent game, but half of those yards were on the first drive. 2 catches for 43 yards, and then he was 4 for 43 the rest of the game. So, Cam Taylor bred physical coverage. I mean, there's Peter Schrager, who's an analyst for NFL Network, is talking about Cam Taylor bred being one of his All Pros for the season. So, I can't say I disagree with him there.
Yep, same page.
No. Second key we had was to get in Josh Allen's face. Bengals only had 1 sack, 5 hits, 22 hurries. It was a nothing spectacular, but they got, you know, they were there when they needed to. BJ Hill is continuing to have probably his best season that he's ever had as a pro. Henderson, you know, is going to get his pressure, but the defense as a whole was performing so well, they didn't even need for the pressure to be in his face. So,
yeah, I thought the defense played really well. The wild part to me is I thought Josh Allen looked comfortable, like he wasn't under a ton of pressure. I thought he looked comfortable, yet the results still weren't there, which is a great thing for the Bengals. I think the Bengals defense is really, really starting to come around and look quite dangerous. I think this Bengals defense has a chance to progress to be better than the AFC Championship defense. I really do. I think they have all the pieces. They've got the front four. They've got the linebacking core, obviously. And I think this secondary is, I think with every minute of the day, they get better. I think they go to bed, they wake up, they're better than when they went to bed. It's like insane. I just think this secondary has a chance to be so special.
They're so fast, and if they can run around without thinking, they're going to be so good. You're going to give up a big play. I mean, someone's going to whiff on a tackle. They're going to be a little over-aggressive, but you'll take that if, you know, and they still don't give up points in the red zone. Like they trade sevens for threes all day long. Going back to saying how comfortable Josh Allen looked, the interception that he had, there was nobody around him, but he started patting the ball, and he was just trying to set up a hole shot that Taylor Britt absolutely baited him into and got an easy interception. So this is a second year quarterback baiting one of the most, I don't say seasoned, but I mean one of the most explosive, better quarterbacks in the entire NFL.
Yeah, I mean, clearly a quarterback that's been a top, I'll say top five, but you could probably say top three quarterback for the last handful of years. I mean, this is a guy. This is a dude. And they, Cam Taylor Britt, I mean, that was as easy of an interception as you may ever have in the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
That was a cakewalk.
Our third key was to squash the run. They only ran for 68 yards total, only 38 on design runs. Josh Allen had 30 on a couple scrambles. He only, and again, like we said going in, they only had three design runs. He doesn't run the ball much going in, which was hilarious listening to Chris Collinsworth during the game. Owns an analytical company. I mean, he owns Pro Football Focus. That's his baby. He acts like he doesn't read any of the work or what, because he kept talking about how much his design running ability. And like, he doesn't run much anymore. Yeah, he will pull down and run when no one's open, but his game isn't these design runs anymore.
Chris Collinsworth is not my favorite. I love Pro Football Focus. I think he did a good thing there, but when he's announcing, I mean, I don't know. I do not enjoy listening to him announce a game.
The next pregnant pause that he allows in a broadcast is the first. He just can't allow just the smallest smidge of silence. He's got to keep talking. It's like, just let a play go. Just let the play react. Let the actual play-by-play announcer call a play without jumping in. Like, just shut the hell up. Again, after the Bills, they marched down the field on the first drive. 7 plays, 85 yards, and the touchdown. They went 4 plays, 18 yards, punt. 2 plays, interception. 3 plays, -1 yard, punt. 5 plays, 28 yards, end of the half. And then the second half, it was 11 plays, but that resulted in a field goal, 3 and out for a punt, 52 yards. And when Kincaid fumbled, when Pratt punched the ball out of Dalton Kincaid's hands, and then the touchdown at the end, they didn't get the ball back. Bengals milked the clock on their last drive, Well, they forced the Bills to use a lot of clock on that. You know, it's end of the game. They need two scores, and it took them 12 yards. I mean, or 12 plays. This is Josh Allen pushing the ball downfield, big chunk plays, and they took a 12-play, 75-yard drive. That's you kind of assume that you're going to give up points in that, and a touchdown isn't a big deal as much as make them earn it. Don't give them a cheap 60-yard touchdown pass. So,
yeah, I mean, when I'm up 14, if you look at me and you say with however much time was left, I'm going to go 12 plays and take up this amount of time for a touchdown, I'd say, okay, go ahead. Because that tells me my offense has to get 2 first downs.
Yep.
And the game's over. If you ever give me the ball with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and you say you need 2 first downs to win the game, deal. Sign me up.
What do you think of the play call on the first play? The Bengals get the ball back. The deep shot to Tyler Boyd.
I thought that it was exactly what the Bengals needed to do. I love the aggression. I think the Bengals at times have not been aggressive. When they've got leads. But the thing I will say is, you've got a defense playing well. There's no need to be aggressive and put yourself in a bad spot. But what I love is they're aggressive at the right times. They pick great moments to be aggressive. And I think you really have to, you have to pat the players on the back for getting the job done in a huge moment on an aggressive play call. But you have to pat Zach Taylor on the back too. How many times do you see people, with 3:10 left in the game and it's 3 run plays and they punt it on 4th and 7? So I love
Marvin Lewis ball.
Exactly. I love the aggression, not only from Zach Taylor, but also the response of the players to go out and execute and basically seal the deal.
Well, at the end of the day, it flipped the field. So even if even if that's all they got, and then they run, 2-minute warning, and they're putting the ball back, Bills have to go the entire length of the field to score instead of getting the ball, somewhere between the 35-yard line and midfield. So it absolutely just completely changed the complexion of the game, being able to hit that first huge pass. So what do you say we give away some awards?
Let's go.
We have, and again, for those of you that aren't watching on YouTube, you are missing out. We have upgraded our production quality so much. We now have weekly awards, bump videos. We are nothing but high budget, high production quality. We are the best at all this stuff. Michael Bay is calling us to figure out how to work some of his visual effects. This movie sucked. Do you watch any Michael Bay movies?
No.
Yeah, they're hey, look, shit's exploding and the plot makes no fucking sense. Hey, you know what makes sense? Giving away the Joe Esposito Award. We're cutting that short. That's going too long. It goes to the entire tight end room. Like we said, Irv Smith, Tanner Hudson, Drew Sample, 10 catches, 101 yards. I mean, that's 10.01 yards per catch, 2 touchdowns. Almost doubled their production for the entire season in just one game. And I don't expect every game to look like that. But you have that threat now, and I don't know if it's just because of Tanner Hudson. Like, we knew going in, like, he is... Dynamic isn't the right word. He's a practice squad player. Doesn't, you know, is in his fourth season, but he's got ability that is different than what they have, and maybe that helped them kind of mix the guy, you know, bring the guys in, mix and match. But to be able to see, you know, what they can do, and again, this is a good team. I mean, the Bills are not are beaten up a little bit. I mean, they're missing Matt Milano, and a couple of the guys went down during the game, and Von Miller looks like he's about 175 years old. If you get juked out of your pants by Joe Mixon on 3rd and 5 with the game on the line, you know it's probably time to hang him up. But, yeah, I mean, huge game from the tight end, and I think they very easily deserve that award. What do you think?
Absolutely. Tight ends were – they were the story of the night. I mean, it was – there's just no doubt about it.
Yeah. With the good comes the bad. With the yin comes the yang. With Joe Esposito comes Randy Watson.
Mm-hmm. Good and terrible.
So the Randy Walker Award goes to Zach Carter. Yeah, he just didn't, you know, he's been, I mean, basically useless. Just hasn't. I feel like him and Irv Smith are neck and neck with how little production. And we got some from Irv Smith. So now we need to see just. It's just that extra. We talk about this all the time. If you give us defensive line depth, we just need something. We just need it. Just need a little bit. Doesn't have to be all pro. We just need a little bit of production.
I don't know, like, leaving the notes, Randy Walker. It's Randy Watson. And I'm really embarrassed that I keep putting that because I keep saying that. Like, it's Randy Watson, for crying out loud. I've seen that movie approximately 750,000 times. And then you just, because you're just looking at the notes. You said Walker. Okay. You said Walker, but that's because I had it written in the notes as Walker, because I'm an idiot apparently.
I knew it was Watson, but
one thing that's kind of, I'm saving grace is the wrong word, but that's kind of mitigating the impact of having no backup on the defensive interior for pass rush is Miles Murphy's coming on. He's getting more and more snaps. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. They were talking about utilizing him more, and he's starting to look really good. The production, if you're just looking for sacks and things like that, it's not there, but he's pushing the pocket. Again, if you get pushed from the interior, I mean, DJ Reader isn't going to get you a lot of sacks because he's not the pass rush guy, but if you can, that gives the quarterback nowhere to step up into, which means if your guys on the outside, if Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson, who's been doing it all year, all, you know, the sacks there for him, because the quarterback's got absolutely nowhere to go. So it's looking for Miles Murphy to keep putting it up. If people that were losing their shit because he doesn't look like Lawrence Taylor because he was a late first round pick, you know, like, oh, he was a bust, and like, no, he's doing what he should be doing. He's busting his ass. He's doing just fine, and you're gonna start seeing some of that production here the later we get into the season. So
yeah, again, I think as long as we just continue to see progression, if you want to think about it in a certain way, in a positive way, he's been a million times more productive than Dax Hill was last year. And Dax Hill is an absolute stud. So if they match up, their trajectories match up, then we're in great shape.
Yeah. He had nine pass rush snaps last week. He had a 77 grade from Pro Football Focus, which is pretty good. So, and again, he's doing a lot of this from the interior. He's got the physical ability to be able to absolutely, if they're doing a twist or stun or anything, anything with him and Hubbard or Trey Hendrickson. Like, he's got the ability, like the strength and size to be able to occupy two linemen to be able to free it up for the outside pass rusher to sneak inside. So, all right, before we get going, but talking about next week's or this upcoming game, got a little bit of news and notes. Bengals do have a little bit of injury concerns going into this week. Jamar Chase has a back issue. Saw that during the game when he went up. Burrow, it was a missed pass by Burrow. I mean, there's no other way to say it. He had his defender beat by two steps, and he just underthrew it. Chase tried to go up to make a great catch and just got upended a little bit and landed really hard on his back. He came back into the game, missed the play, but they were working on it. And on Monday, when he was in the locker room, the best thing he could say to the beat reporters was, when they asked him how he's doing, he's like, "I'm alive." I don't know if anyone's had, like, how many people had back injuries. It's not anything that's it's going to be long term and bothering. It's just going to be a matter of comfortable, and they're going to be able to get it loose, and it's just going to be sore for a while. The only reason that it's even an issue is because T. Higgins popped up as a limited participant Wednesday with a hamstring issue. This is 1:30 on Thursday, and haven't seen anything about participation or anything for Thursday's practices to see if it was just a small thing and he's going to be limited, or he's, you know, possibility of being out. And especially the Bengals have a short week going forward after this week. So if there's any bit of question or consternation about him being out this week, I think you got to sit him and, or, you know, Chase for that matter. But I think Chase is more of a go, because his is not a soft tissue issue. It's more of just a comfort and playing through the pain. It could be a big game for the wide receiver depth. We'll get into that when we look forward more into the game, but T's hamstring is definitely something to look forward to, or to look, not forward to, look into and kind of be a little worried about until we get a little further deeper into the week. Sam Hubbard popped up with a little bit of an ankle injury. So any thoughts on any of the injuries the Bengals have so far?
I don't think any of them are massive cause for concern. Of course, you're gonna look at it and you're worried about it. But to me, it's really about if the Bengals can somehow just survive Sunday. If some of these guys are missing, if they can just survive Sunday against Houston, which I know that's the definition of a trap game when you're just like, if we can just get past this one, we'll be all right. But if they can survive Sunday, I think they're in a really good spot. Obviously, coming back with a Thursday game against Baltimore, it is a little tricky there with the quick turnaround. But I think you got a little, 10-day window that if you can just kind of survive in advance, it almost feels like a playoff little 2-week window. Just survive in advance, and the injuries, they're not long-term injuries, so that's fine. So I don't have a massive amount of concern, and I'm just hoping we can get through the 10 days without anything major.
Yeah, and another thing that's helpful is if either of those have to miss, Charlie Jones was designated to return from the IR with his thumb issue. Now, he hasn't been activated yet, but that's probably procedural. I would assume that he's going to be up. We've seen Yoshi integrated more and more, running more routes. He's not getting a ton of targets because you have three horses in front of you, but he clearly has Joe Burrow's trust. Trent Irwin has Burrow's trust. Tyler Boyd. I think they'll be fine. You don't want to be down your two best weapons, but Bengals are uniquely positioned to be able to withstand if need be. Have you taken a look at the Texans injury report?
I have not.
It probably would have been easier to list the players who weren't on the injury report. They had 23 players. Yeah. Will Anderson did not practice. Blake Cashman, their linebacker, he's having a fantastic season. He's graded like 85 and above in every measurement on PFF, in coverage, in tackling, in pass rush. I mean, he's having a fantastic year. He didn't practice. Steven Nelson, which is one of the starting cornerbacks, he didn't practice. Daryl Stingley? That's his dad. Derek Stingley. I got one. I mean, it's close enough. It's his parent. He's coming back from IR, so it's question that he probably, I don't say probably, but it's not guaranteed that he's going to be activated for this game as he's still working back. Jimmy Ward starting safety, he didn't practice. Laremy Tunsil probably just got a Veterans Day of rest. He's a fantastic offensive tackle, but they've got so many guys. So if this is the week the Bengals are going to be a little bit nicked up, this might not be the worst week because they're going to be going most likely against backup cornerbacks and a backup safety.
That would be the time for it.
Yeah. Again, you prefer everybody be healthy, but you do what you can. Take a quick look here at the standings. Last week, again, divisional sweep. This keeps happening. This division is too damn good. I mean, even the Steelers, who have an awful offense, Browns don't have a very good offense. They just keep winning. Baltimore's looks like a damn runaway freight train right now. They won 37-3. Lamar Jackson barely had to throw the ball. I mean, he had 150 yards passing, somewhere in that general direction. They just steamrolled him. Luckily, the team I was playing in fantasy had Geno Smith at quarterback, and I think he had 2 points for the entire game.
It was a bad week for Geno.
Yeah, it's Ravens look like they're possibly the best team in the NFL. I don't, you know, what do you think?
I think that the bank or the Ravens look like right now probably the best, most dominant team in the NFL. But that does not surprise me. Lamar Action Jackson is Mr. Regular Season Quarterback, so this is kind of what you get from the Ravens almost all the time. And how many playoff wins does Lamar Jackson have? He's got to prove it to me in the playoffs when he has to throw the ball from the pocket. I mean, I feel like I've said this for 5 years running. Every year it's, oh, he could be there. He's back to MVP Lamar. Yeah, well, MVP Lamar was, you know, playing against a Bengals defense that was terrible. And the guy's never done a thing in the playoffs. So let's wait and see when it comes playoff time where Lamar Jackson's at. And but right now they do look like their normal, phenomenal regular season selves.
Yeah, they're due to crap the bed a little bit. They play the Browns this week, so at least it's not going to be a divisional sweep like it has been pretty much seemingly every week when we're not playing each other. So Cleveland had themselves a dominating win over the Cards. Absolutely obliterated. Poor Clayton Tune. They hung that kid out to dry. Cardinals had a grand total of 58 yards on offense.
Yeah, I mean, it was Clayton Tune looked like a sacrificial lamb, to be honest. I mean, that was ugly.
Yeah, I didn't think he was a good quarterback when he played for the University of Houston, and then you throw him out in front of Myles Garrett and the rest of that defense, and it's good luck, kid. Pittsburgh scored late, beat Tennessee 20-16 on Thursday Night Football. Again, they've got Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin will not let them lose. They've got the Packers, so they're in decent position to win again this week, but they're still not a very good football team, but they're going to pull out 8-9 wins because that's what they do.
Yeah, I mean, again, this goes back to the Steelers are what they are, regular season Steelers. They're going to find a way to be 9-8. And you're not going to know how it happened. You're not going to know. It's going to be amazing. They're going to be terrible on offense. They're going to play pretty good defense, and they're going to find a way to win 20-16 games. I mean, the Steelers are kind of a little bit, they remind me a little bit of like the Jets with Zach Wilson. I mean, somehow they win some games, 13-10, you know, they beat the Giants in a game that had 29 punts. That's just kind of how the Steelers play, you know. I don't think anybody fears the Steelers, and I think the Steelers can win any given week and lose any given week. That's just kind of their MO. But here we are, they're 5-3, so you know, we'll see.
Yeah, and that seems like an awful game to be forced to watch. The Packers are not the Packers that, you know, of Aaron Rodgers. They're 3-5. I think Jordan Love might be a decent quarterback, but they've got a lot to work through there. So we do have a little bit of, as let's go ahead.
I thought Green Bay had a decent week. I thought Jordan Love got a little bit better last week. So to me, I look at that Green Bay Pittsburgh game, and I think Green Bay has a real possibility to make some noise there in that game.
Would love to see it. Would like it a little better if it were actually in Green Bay instead of at Acrisure or whatever the hell that is. But Pittsburgh isn't exactly world beaters. We did get to break out our breaking news bump. Again, our production quality is just so fantastic. Again, as we're going, it's 1:43 here on Thursday. Bengals practice is just going on. Jamar Chase and Higgins are not on the field right now. So no word on whether they're working on the side fields rehab or if they're going to be limited. But as of now, they're neither of them are on the field. So again, I would, if I were to lay money, I would bet that Chase will probably play and Higgins will sit out again just to get that little extra bit of time before before the Thursday game. Not that you want to punt on this game, not that they're looking past the Texans, but that game is secondarily as important as the Baltimore Ravens game. Bengals need to be as full health as they can. They're already 0-2 in the division, so so that leads us into this week, week 9, here versus Houston Texans at Paycor, 1 p.m. Is this a trap game? I mean, Bengals are coming off a huge primetime win, have a short week to face the rival on Thursday night in Baltimore. It matches, it meets a lot of the criteria for a trap game. Are you concerned about that?
I only get concerned about trap games with when you look at the makeup of your team. A trap game isn't something that happens to every team. And when you hear these Bengals talk, they really have me believing that they take everything one week at a time. And they even made reference, I'm trying to remember which player it was. It wasn't Joe Burrow, it was somebody else. But somebody made reference to Baltimore. And basically, the player shut it down like immediately. It was like, "Hey, we got to beat Houston. You know, Baltimore is not even on the radar." So I think trap games are only happen to teams that allow them to happen. When you allow yourself to think, you know, ahead, I don't see this team doing that. I think they're 5-3. I think they're in last place in the AFC North. I think it's kind of wild to think that we're talking about a trap game for a last place team in the AFC North. It's kind of crazy, but I don't see trap game because I don't think the Bengals will allow it to be a trap game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just watching here on Twitter, I guess Jamar Chase is walking out to the practice field with his jersey in hand. Higgins is behind him without a jersey, so I'm going to bet that Higgins is going to, Chase is going to be working out on the side field as a limited participant. So, I think any thoughts of it being a trap game went away when you look at the game CJ Stroud had on Sunday. He's in the midst of probably the best rookie season by a quarterback in NFL history. I think Justin Herbert's season in 2020 is the standard bearer right now, but he's got 14 touchdowns, one interception. And he threw 470 yards on, 30 of 42 passing. Five touchdowns, I believe, on Sunday.
Yeah,
and came from behind.
And he broke the rookie passing record in a single game, I believe, breaking Andrew Luck's 455.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's definitely putting numbers up.
Yeah, they came from behind to beat the Buccaneers. They're 4-4. They're an unlikely 4-4. You looked at them beforehand, and Stroud wasn't the step in and be good to go from day one draft pick. I mean, that was supposed to be Bryce Young. Panthers still only have one win on the year, and the Texans are 4-4 and only a game back in playoff position. They're only one game behind the Bengals. If they win on Sunday, I mean they're going to be ahead of them in playoff position.
Yeah, I think you got to give Houston's head coach a lot of credit to come into that Houston situation, which has been basically a train wreck for a decade.
Yeah.
Maybe more. To come in and not only win some games, but he's showing that team's got energy. He's reinvigorated that entire clubhouse. So you've got to give the head coach a lot of credit.
Yeah, I had a little bit of feeling like the Bengals a couple of years ago, where everyone going in, yeah, this team, you know, they're going to win two or three games, and then just coming out of nowhere, and they're competitive. Like there's more talent that was on that roster. I mean, again, they brought in some between C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, wide receiver Tank Dell. I mean, they brought in some. They're getting great production from the draft, but they're still getting production from guys that have been there. So this isn't the pushover. This isn't the laughter that you were kind of hoping for in the beginning of the season when you saw this gauntlet the Bengals had to face. You see the Texans, like, okay, good. You know, you've got Seattle, you've got San Francisco, Buffalo. You got an easy game before you face Baltimore. Now, I mean, they're a pretty damn good team. So, and God, if they were in the NFC, they'd probably be the number two seed behind the Eagles. That conference sucks. All right, we'll bring out our three keys of the week for the Bengals offense. First one, blink the pass rush. Texans only have 17 sacks on the season, fourth fewest in the NFL. Six of those came in one game against the Panthers and Bryce Young. So, and Will Anderson didn't practice yesterday and is, at the very least, is probably going to be a little bit hobbled. Bengals offensive line has been gelling and probably the best offensive, looking like the best offensive line they've had since Whitworth left, maybe?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in my opinion, yeah, for sure.
Do you think that's doable? I mean, when I say blank, I mean, there's no reason to think that they can keep Burrow upright the entire game.
I absolutely think it's doable. I think this offensive line's getting better week by week. So yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. Second key we have, and again, this we'll see how it goes. Can the wide receiver beast without T and Jamar? Again, they're likely going to be going up against a lot of backups in the Houston secondary. With what, you know, what we're seeing from Yosivash, from Boyd, Irwin, Chuck Sizzle's going to be back. I feel good about that. You know, you're not going to get someone who's going to be able to win every single one-on-one matchup like you can kind of expect Jamar to. But, and maybe this is the reason why they drafted two wide receivers in the draft, despite already having a stacked room. I don't see any reason why the offense is going to struggle mightily with, you know, without its two guys. They figured out how to use tight ends. That, you know, you're still getting production out of mixing in the passing game. So I think they'll be fine. Where are you on that?
I think that that whole onus falls on Joe Burrow. If he can continue to just distribute the ball and make the right decisions, which clearly he's doing, you're not seeing Joe Burrow force the ball to Jamar Chase. You're not seeing him force it to T. Higgins. You know, he waited till they took away Jamar, and then T had a monster game. Tight ends have a monster game. So I think Joe just needs to keep doing what he's doing and find the openings in the defense. And then I trust all of our guys, as if you take away Jamar and T, and that's our wide receiver room this week, I absolutely trust all those guys. I think it's really more about let Joe make the right decisions. As long as he makes the right decisions, I totally believe in our wide receiver room.
And they're showing so much more creativity, so you don't need just sending two wide receivers out and just win your matchups. They're moving guys around. They're using different formations. Joe Burrow is 20 of 24 thrown from under center or thrown from play action in the past two games. So he's finding favorable matchups and finding the open guy and getting rid of the ball, and they're absolutely feasting right there, which I was leery about them trying to go to more an under center look because they were terrible running the ball under center last year. I like Burrow being able to just line everyone up, look at the chess pieces, but they figure something out and they're killing it under center. Again, not that they need to go primarily to, but the last couple of games when they've started to bog down and struggle, it's in the time when they're off their scripted game plan and they're using more of the old standby Bengals plays, you know, play calling that they've used for, you know, Scobie, everything from under center or everything from in shotgun RPOs and stuff like that, that just teams are game planning for, the teams are ready for.
Yep.
Third key for the game is play four quarters. We hit on this earlier. They've yet to put together an entire game. They've been fantastic in the first quarter of the last four games. They have seven touchdowns and one field goal in their first two drives of each of the past four games. It's like 6.5 points per drive, which is absolutely ridiculous. After that, they hit an absolute lull for the second and third quarters, wake up a little bit in the fourth quarter. I want to see him put the hammer down and just absolutely be up 35-0 at halftime. Put in Jake Browning in the fourth quarter. Let Mixon, let Trevion Williams, God forbid, give the ball to Chris Evans once. Just let them run the ball in the third quarter, in the second half. And this, if you're not going to be at full strength, so odds are a little less likely that that's going to happen, but this would be a week. This would be a good week to get everyone healthy and take the second half off.
Completely agree. I think, you know, we've talked about the progression with the Bengals offense. I think this is the next step. Let's get to a full four-quarter game. We played some really good games. Let's go ahead and get to a full four-quarter game and kind of put the Texans away, like I think you feel like the Bengals should. Let's put them away and let's kind of have an easy week right before Thursday. And I think that would have multiple, not only get healthy, but to have that, you know, you only got 4 days in between games. I just think only playing 2.5, 3 quarters would be a very welcome sight for a lot of those players.
Yeah. I mean, just take a handful of Nixon cuts and bruises and bangs, off your key players. Obviously everyone wants to do that every week. You want to hang half 100 on teams, but this looks like, you know, this is a week that's a possibility. You got a team that just absolutely, you know, we've spent time talking about how the Texans are, you know, a surprise and they're a pretty good football team, but when you've got 23 of your 53 guys on the injury report, you're beat up. So they're just hoping to get through the next game without any more guys going down. So let's talk about the defensive keys.
Let's get to it. The first key is if you can't stand the heat, stay out of the kitchen. We got to bring the heat. Stroud, to be honest, has been a really, really good quarterback when he's not pressured. And all you have to do is go back and look at the final drive last week. If you don't pressure him, this guy's going to dice you up. His completion percentage without pressure is almost 70%, sitting like right at 67. When he is pressured, it drops to 48. That's a significant drop. So that's something we have to do. We've got to pressure him. We can't let him just sit back there. And he's like the lazy chair quarterback. You can literally see him when he gets comfortable and he's just sitting back there and just winging it. He's a dude. I mean, he's a guy. This guy can play. We've got to get pressure on him. The other thing is it's not just his completion percentage. His Pro Football Focus rating with pressure goes from 92 to 37. That's like a jaw-dropping number. I mean, that is I was stunned when I saw that number. That is as massive as you may ever see with Pro Football Focus. I mean, that's basically a guy that's out of the league to a guy that's an all-pro. So, I mean, that's just such a wild drop for pressure. So, again, Bengals need to get pressure. They've done a really good job of it, and it doesn't necessarily have to equate to sacks. It just has to equate to kind of speeding up that quarterback's clock. And you saw it with Josh Allen. You spoke about it with the hole shot. He patted the ball, and he wanted to get rid of it. Well, you want to get rid of it because your internal clock is saying, I got to go, because the Bengals are just constantly getting there. So even though the Bengals only had one sack last week, I thought they got enough pressure. I think they need to get a little bit more this week, just a touch, and make sure that Stroud doesn't feel comfortable.
Talking about his the PFF score of 37, Dez Ritter, who obviously I'm irrationally a fan of because he's a UC fan. He was benched by a team who's not very good and does not have another quarter, a decent quarterback. his grade under pressure is 39. So if you've got guys in your face, you're better off with Desmond Ridder throwing the ball than C.J. Stroud. That tells you all you need to know. That also tells you how well their offensive line has been keeping him clean, that he's been able to put up like ridiculous numbers when he's been so erratic when guys are in his lap.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is, you know me about how I feel about Desmond Ridder. So if you're saying that he's worse than Desmond Ridder when pressured, you got my attention. You know what I mean? Yeah. So the other part is keep everything in front of the safeties, which I think the Bengals have done at least the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think they've done a phenomenal job of really since the Ravens game, probably. So we need to do that again. The Texans have 3 receivers with 14 catches, with 14 plus catches that average over 15 yards a catch, which is again, also kind of a mind blowing stat. That they could have that many big plays. But I think that goes to C.J. Stroud. He's that good if you don't pressure him. He can fit things in small windows deep down the field because he is that good. So you've got to get that pressure. I think those two play hand in hand. If he sits back there, you're going to give up 15, 20-yard plays because he is that guy. And they have some nice receivers. Nico Collins is really having a nice year. So you've got to keep an eye on Nico Collins. They have some weapons. But again, I think it goes back to CJ Stroud. I think he is that good. So we've got to get that pressure. The other part, the last key is to gang tackle. And we saw this, the play that pops right into my mind is Dawson Knox fumbling where Nick Scott hits him and Jermaine Pratt comes in afterwards. The Texans have 7 fumbles on the season. So if we can continue to gang tackle, pursuit to the football, as I always call it, we got to pursue the football. If we can get hats to the football, there's opportunities there for the ball to come out. And I think of those 7, a handful of them are from Stroud. So
5
pursuit of the football, 5 of them are from Stroud. Okay, yeah, so 5 total from Stroud. Pursuit of the football, let's gang tackle. Again, that helps you with not missing tackles, and we've seen when the Bengals don't miss tackles, they're hard to really, put points up on. So let's gang tackle and let's make them hold on to the football and be worried about that. Because if we can force turnovers, that's how you get that complete game where, maybe we see Jake Browning in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Nico Collins is one of the players that did not practice yesterday. I haven't heard anything about, obviously, they're an hour behind us, so their practice probably hasn't started yet. He has 631 yards on the season, 17.5 yards per catch. And that's not even the highest. Noah Brown, who was on the Cowboys last year that had a couple big plays against the Bengals, 19.1 yards per catch on 14 receptions. They just are killing it deep. And Tank Dell, I mean, the guy's about the size of a garden gnome, but having probably the best season. He and Jordan Addison are probably the best 2 rookie receivers this year. 454 yards, 16.2 yards of reception. They're just getting deep. They're getting loose. And this is a game when you, with those numbers, with their ability, I love what Dax Hill has been. I love Jordan Battle. Nick Scott has been playing better, but this would have been a lot more comfortable if we had Jesse Bates and Von Bell still in the backfield. Jesse Bates is playing at an all-pro level this year. I'm not necessarily overly concerned because again I trust the Bengals' talent. I trust Ludini cooking up a good scheme. But I mean, this team's put up a lot of yards. I mean, Stroud has 14 touchdowns and 1 interception. He does, and despite only having the 1 pick, his turnover-worthy plays are 0.9 when he's clean, 5.4. when he's pressured. That's 5.5 times. So that's Bengals. Again, we talked about this with Josh Allen. The Bengals are going to have a chance to get their hands on a ball, and they have the best turnover differential in the league. They've been coming away when the opportunity's been presented itself. So I expect there to be some turnovers. C.J. Stroud is not going to walk out with the same ridiculous touchdown to interception ratio that he's had so far.
Yeah, speaking to we were talking about the Bengals secondary there real quick. when we're talking about the deep balls. I'd be lying if I told you that anytime you have a young secondary, it's the snowball rolling down the hill. It gets a little scary. You give up the first deep ball. Then you give up another deep ball. And all of a sudden, you got young guys back there in the secondary. You can go from really, really confident to going, oh, my gosh, what is going on, very quickly. When you have a young secondary, you really just got to keep them hemmed up. And that goes to our second point there about, you know, keeping them in front of the safeties. Do not let that deep ball get going, because when you have a young secondary, it's I'm telling you, you can lose that confidence in a hurry.
Yeah, and DJ Turner had his first little bit of a struggle on Sunday. He was responsible for the touchdown pass to Diggs. He just got roasted. I mean, none of these guys are as good as Stephon Diggs, but DJ Turner's been shutting everyone down, and, you know, his first little time of struggle, I'm not concerned that he's all of a sudden going to turn into a pumpkin. I mean, he's been fantastic all year long. I mean, he's still a rookie. He's still going into his ninth NFL game, so. Want to do some predictions?
Let's go.
Let's do some predictions. First up is our good buddy Nate Dotson from the Riverfront Reds.
So the upstart, plucky Houston Texans think they're going to come into Paycor and do work against Joe Burrow and the Bengals? I ain't buying it. This has trap game written all over it. I know, emotional wins for both teams. Houston's full of confidence. But it just ain't happening. The boys are cooking, and they're going to pull this one out. 29-17.
I think it's fantastic that Nate is leaning so hard into the wrestling. Like it's like he's doing bumps for WWE and stuff like that. And we're going to have to work on something. We were talking about it, that I'm going to have to put a fake mustache on and cosplay as Mean Gene. And next time he comes into town in Cincinnati, we're going to have something, because he's leaning into this hard and it looks fantastic.
I'm totally on board. Whatever I can do to help, as long as you don't ask me to dress up like Stacy Keebler or something, I'm cool.
You already have the kind of thicker beard and mustache. I'm going to give you a 2x4. You are Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I can be Hacksaw Jeff. Hey-oh! Yeah, I got this. Let's go.
Stick your thumb up and have some shaggy-ass looking mullet.
Yeah, I got it.
All right. Next up, Tim Dotson. Wow. He's not one of the Dotson brothers. Tim Daniel. It's the Late Night Reds.
We got Bengals-Texans Sunday at Paycor. Bengals 7-point favorites, but I like this Texans team. I think they're putting some really good stuff together. CJ Stroud looks like the truth. But not this week. I know a lot of people want to circle this as a trap game because of the Buffalo game Sunday Night Football. I don't see that being the case. I think the Bengals win this one again, but I do think Houston hangs out. They're third in the league in pass offense for a reason. But fourth quarter, Bengals take it away. 27-17, Houday.
Thank you, Tim. Again, similar lines. Everyone seems to be dismissing this being a trap game for the Bengals. I think we're all kind of on the same line. Our next, we'll call him celebrity prediction. Our good buddy Carlos Guevara, former Reds farmhand, Padres farmhand, pit for the Padres. He's been on Late Night Reds with Tim. He's part of the extended Riverfront family. He's been on the Riverfront Reds show. He is a Texan. He is a fan of the Houston Texans. So I asked him for his prediction here. So don't know what to expect. What do you got for us, Carlos?
Here we go. Houston Texans coming in to Paycor Stadium. Coming off a big win for this young group. D'Amico Ryans has them fired up, playing well, inspired ball. CJ Stroud having arguably one of the greatest games a rookie QB has ever had. Cincinnati Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase, a little banged up. Maybe they're looking forward to the Baltimore Ravens game they have next week. Hopefully they are. Hopefully they overlook my Texans a little bit. But my final prediction is going to be Houston Texans 17, Cincinnati Bengals 28. I believe it's going to be an under if you're a betting man or a woman. Hopefully it's a good game. Hopefully I'm wrong and the Texans pull it out somehow. But either way, enjoy the game.
What I find hilarious is all three of them picked Texans to lose, scoring 17 points. They all picked within the same range of points. I mean, they averaged 20, you know, 29, 27, 28 points. They did these all on their own. It's not like they were coordinating, you know. I mean, I'm in group chat with all of them, and pretty unique. I'm not too far from them, and I've got the Bengals 24-20. I think it's going to be kind of a similar script. I would love to see the Bengals go out absolutely and just house them from the go. Until I see them play four quarters, I'm not going to predict it. Stroud's going to make some plays. Bengals will play sloppy at times, but I do trust that Lou's going to confuse and fluster the rookie. D-line's going to muddy the pocket. They're going to come away with two interceptions. And, you know, like I said, you know, they're going to kind of ruin his, as of now, relatively sterling touchdown to interception ratio. So, Greg, where are you on the game?
I have the game looking like 24-13. I think everybody's seeing a lot of offense, and I think when you have something like that, I think, like you said, Bengals are a little busted up on offense. Texans are a little busted up. I see this being more of a defensive battle. I think 24-13, I think it'll be close early, but I think the Bengals eventually kind of pull away, kind of similar to the last two games, not really ever in doubt. Kind of a ho-hum kind of win. I think we'll kind of be having the same conversation next week. But 24-13, I think the Bengals pull it out, and they make Houston have to drive the football, and the Texans struggle a little bit in that regard. And I think the Bengals pull this one out.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all pretty much in similar green as to how the game's going to go. If you can force the Texans to work their way down the field methodically, like the Bengals were able to do in that last drive against the Bills, you're in good shape. Again, Burrow should have plenty of time to throw. Will Anderson is a little banged up, and they're not a good pass rush team anyway. I mean, he's having a decent season, but he only has two sacks, and no one else is really cleaning up when he's getting in there, leaving lanes for guys to escape. I say that, you know, again, we all have similar scores. I think it's a lot better odds that Bengals are going to run away with this one than it's going to be a close game, than the Texans actually winning. But again, yeah, I mean, Bengals are going to score in the 20s. I don't expect the Texans to put up more than three touchdowns or something like that. So,
yeah, agreed.
That pretty much wraps up all we have for this week. Greg, do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I do. I'm going to do my Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I need you guys to get on Slack. Let me know what I need to work on. Hey-oh! Okay, let me know. I mean, let me know what I need to work on to get Hacksaw Jim Duggan. We got to get this ready. I'm very excited about this whole thing.
Do you have a wrestling singlet?
I don't think so.
No. Didn't he have like, he had the one shoulder that he would like take off, like take, you know, and then.
Yeah. I don't know that I can pull off the one shoulder strap look and take. I don't know that that's going to look good. You know, there's going to be a whole lot going on there. But yeah, we'll do our best.
I'm looking forward to this. This will be absolutely friggin' hilarious. I'm going to have to wear a shirt and a bow tie. I don't have a bow tie. I'm going to have to find one. I'm going to have to draw on some little fringe, you know, because he's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, look forward to that. At some point, we have too much time on our hands.
I'm legitimately fired up about this. I'm all in.
We just need to get you a wig just to give you a nice full mullet.
I will grow the mullet to make this happen. I will grow.
I am absolutely going to hold you to it. All right, everyone. This does it for this week's episode of The Bengals Show. We'll be back here on Sunday night live at 8 o'clock for some postgame. Again, I'm fully expecting to be going on about a big Bengals win, 5 in a row, heading into Baltimore with a big head of steam. Start heading down the stretch and start thinking of actual playoff position and possibly get back into first place and worry about maybe getting a bye. 14-3 is going to get you a first round or the number one seed and first round bye, right?
You would think.
I hope so. That's what I'm aiming for. I mean, Bengals are going to win 13 in a row going into the playoffs. I mean, that's completely doable.
Hey, don't put it past the Bengals. Don't doubt Joey B.
Knock him, knocking on wood right now. I mean, he's undefeated in the past 2 years in November and December. So, all right, y'all. Until Sunday night, everyone be good. Bye.